tuned in to Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
Welcome to Beer Me on Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. I'm your host, Sarah Jane. During my time in culinary school, I gained an appreciation for good beer and continued my studies in beer at grad school at NYU. Since then, I have been a beer director, beer bar general manager, and I get to continue to explore the beer world with all of you wonderful listeners. Every week, I will have a different guest on the show to discuss different parts of the beer world, from brewers, importers, educators. This will allow us to examine the dynamic world of beer through different lenses. So whether you're new to beer or a seasoned professional, we will have something for you. So today I am joined in the studio by John Moorhead. He is the American Homebrewers Association National Homebrew Competition Director. And we are very excited to welcome back Katie Marisek. She is the Federal Affairs Manager of the Brewers Association. And for those of you who have been longtime fans of the show, she was my very first guest. So thank you, too, for coming in on Monday.
Happy to be here.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Sarah.
So before we dive in, how was everyone's weekend?
It was great.
Yeah?
Yeah, we judged some homebrew over the weekend and got to tour around D.C. for a little bit.
Yeah, it was a busy weekend. Everybody's back. Holiday parties are happening. We had the homebrew competition. So a lot of fun, but December is always a crazy month from my perspective.
For sure. So we'll dive into the homebrew competition a little bit later, but what are some beers that you guys had this weekend that were notable that you would highly recommend?
A lot of people were in from out of town this week. Jeremy Danner from Boulevard was in for a little bit, and Mike Sardina from Bissell Brothers up in Maine. Hung out with them. I had some really good beer. Bissell Brothers, Maine, I think people who have had the beer before know Swish. Double IPA with Mosaic. I think Citra's in there as well.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really good, surprisingly drinkable double IPA.
And that was their showcase at Church Key.
Yep.
Nice.
Yep. So that was a lot of fun. I also was up at Denizen's, and they have something, a Low County Common, mm-hmm. a brown sour, which I could have just drank that beer all day.
Nice.
Denizen's is killing it.
Very cool. Shout out to Denizen's. They've definitely been on the show a couple times and have crushed it. So, how about you, John?
I was up in Rhode Island in Boston earlier this week, and mm-hmm. I always try to get my hands on some Maine Beer Company beer. So I also had a double IPA with Mosaic and Citra. Dinner, limited release.
Yeah.
You know, just can drink a lot of that, just like Katie was saying, very crushable for a double IPA, which catches up to you quickly, but...
I think on Friday I saw a couple bottles still of Lunch at the H Street Beer Cellar still available. So, you know, get them while they're hot.
Yeah. Get lunch while it's hot. And for those of you who don't know, Katie Marisek's sister does work for Maine Beer Company.
She is a treasure. She really is.
She's aight.
I had a really great beer this weekend from Single Cut Beersmiths out of Astoria, New York. Mm-hmm. I lived in Astoria. I have a big place in my heart for Single Cut and always will. So I'm a little biased towards those guys. Surprisingly enough, I did not have one of their many really delicious IPAs. I had their sour lager that they added hibiscus and blackberries to. And they were using wheat malt. So it was like this really beautiful kind of berry colored beer with this like giant fluffy head that's coming from the wheat malt. So that was kind of cool. And it was interesting. I was drinking it as I was kind of, well, as my husband was cooking dinner and I was, you know, not helping that much. And it was, you know, great. It's a great kind of palate opener, you know, as an aperitif. And then as I drank it with the food, he made this like a really rich, hearty Korean stew. And it was one of those beer pairings gone wrong. I was like, oh, light sour lager with fruit notes does not go well with like this deep, rich. I mean, the stew just demolished it, like completely overpowered it. So
I have never had a soured lager before. So I'm very interested to know what that tastes like. Is it more sour or more lager?
More lager. I mean, it was not it was not aggressively sour. If anything, it was more like kind of like tart and dry. Okay. It wasn't like sour for sure. It had, I mean, apparently, sorry, no, it wasn't blackberries, it was black currants, but, you know, it was definitely more hibiscus than anything, so, for sure. But it was this very, you know, beautiful little fluffy cloud on top, which was kind of nice. So you two are here because there was the annual Capitol Hill staff homebrew competition yesterday. So I'm totally unfamiliar with this. So, you know, speak to me as one would an idiot. take me through, you know, what this is, why you do it, and, you know, how it went down.
I can start on the how it went down
okay.
type thing. So I've been with the BA for a few years now, and to put in technical terms, I am their lobbyist. And I've gotten to know a lot of different facets of the industry that have come with being the lobbyist and representing brewers. And of course, the one thing that seems to connect all of us, myself included, is homebrewing. Charlie Papazian wrote the book on homebrewing, and you know he is the guy. He's mm-hmm. the guy who is responsible for the Brewers Association and for so many of us having our passion. And we have the House and Senate Small Brewers Caucuses, and I'm always looking for different ways to educate members of Congress and staff about, you know, the different things that happen in the brewing industry. And Gary Glass, the director of the AHA, came out one year to talk specifically about homebrewing. And there are, you know, some political things that come along with that. Homebrewing itself was not made legal until 1978, when mm-hmm. it was signed into law by Jimmy Carter. And we were talking about this earlier, but I think 2013 was when the last state actually made it legal. That was...
Was that Georgia?
It was Mississippi. Mississippi and Alabama, yeah. So it's still sort of a fairly new thing for every state in the country for people to be able to legally do. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was kind of cool. And then I thought, nope, we should do a competition. And that's where John ended up coming in. We decided that we wanted to see if we could get some of the people who are excited about beer homebrewing on the Hill. And I think this is our third year that we've been doing this. And so far it's been great.
I would agree. Yeah. I only entered the scene when Katie wanted someone to run the competition.
Okay.
And we kind of talked about the idea of it mm-hmm. and kind of try to figure out what would work and what wouldn't and how we would promote it and things like that. We wanted to kind of get a good amount of PR around it as well. I don't know. Have you ever seen the trophy that you get?
No.
So, you know, the bill from School of Rock?
Yeah. I'm just a bill sitting on Capitol Hill.
So it's that.
Okay.
About 3 feet tall. It's 3D. And it says beer instead of Bill as the pin.
Oh, nice.
It's amazing. We'll show you a picture later. But
I call him Build-A-Beer.
Build-A-Beer.
Oh, it's like a Build-A-Bond reference a little bit.
Maybe.
No. So what does it entail? Like, how do you do this? Who can enter?
So anyone who works on Capitol Hill, that's mm-hmm. kind of what we narrowed it down to, was we didn't want to restrict it to just staffers of offices. Of course, plenty of them enter and are interested in it, but, you know, police officers on Capitol Hill, anyone, people who work in the cloakroom, janitor, anyone who works, any employee is able to join the competition. Last year we had a Capitol Hill police officer win, actually. Got him to show up to accept his award. You know, it's just a way to spread, you know, homebrewing is not restricted to anyone, so opening up to anyone who works on Capitol Hill kind of goes hand in hand with just the spirit of homebrewing. And we had 22 entries this year,
mm-hmm.
Which is 22 different, you know, offices joining the competition. So either they brew as an individual or join as a team of their office. It's a lot of fun. We have a lot of fun with it, especially the award ceremony, calling people out to come accept their ribbon or big award.
Yeah, and you think that it would be a lot of the Pacific Northwest offices who are really doing all of the entries, but mm-hmm. they're from all over. I think the guy who won first year worked for a member down in Louisiana. So we see people from all over who are participating in the competition, which I think is super cool. We were also excited to hear, like, one of the other reasons that we were really pushing to do it was to get people excited about homebrewing. And yesterday we were talking with Sarah Bondolini from the DC Homebrewers, and she said that some Hill staffers showed up at their meeting.
Oh,
and that they had
awesome.
Heard about the competition. They'd also been to our homebrew on the Hill Day,
mm-hmm.
which is, we did that. That was a fun excursion that we tried this year, where we actually did a homebrew on the House side and the Senate side, because we wanted people to be able to stop by and learn about what it takes to homebrew. But they heard about it from that. They tried brewing a beer. Apparently it wasn't very good, but they wanted to learn more and how to brew a good beer. So getting people excited about it was really cool. And the more, for me, the more that they understand about brewing, the easier it is to do my job.
Yeah. So what are the rules as far as, so you mentioned that people can do individual entries, people can do a team entry. Is there a particular style that they have to do, or what are the parameters they have to follow?
Yeah. Really not many.
Okay.
the Beer Judge Certification Program has their style guideline, and any style that they can, you know, brew in that style guideline is acceptable to the competition. And then it's kind of up to us to figure out how we want to group things together for our categories. Cause you know, we could have 22 entries that are all different styles. we got to try to figure out what goes well with each other and, figure out what should be judged with each other. And, so we had three categories this year. So not too many, other than you have to be an employee on mm-hmm. the Hill and then just register your entry so we know it's coming. But other than that, yeah, it's very easy to enter, and we kind of keep registration open for a while to allow people to kind of figure out what they'd like to do, and then we have about a 2-week drop-off window this year was at Blue Jacket Brewing down in the Navy Yard.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we did the judging as well. So very easy to enter. We'll try to make it easy to enter, at least.
Yeah, like an all-inclusive kind mm-hmm. of situation.
Yeah.
Now, for those of you just tuning in, I'm sitting down with Katie Marisik. She's the Federal Affairs Manager from the Brewers Association. And John Moorhead, he is the American Homebrewers Association National Homebrew Competition Manager. I said I was going to demote you slowly throughout this. So we started as director, and now we're going to manager.
I'm excited for the end.
You're just going to be John, this guy. Okay, so we've got the rules down in that there are not that many rules. You can be an individual, you can be as a group. Who are the judges? Are you allowed to share who the judges are?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
who are the judges?
We get some certified judges mm-hmm. from the Beer Judge Certification Program, usually national or up, just to kind of make sure that we're giving that feedback that the entrants are going to want so badly, as well as some professional judges as well. So we had Ro Gwenzel he's the brewmaster at Blue Jacket Brewing, and then Josh Chapman, who also used to work at Blue Jacket, who now works at Black Narrow.
Yeah, Josh actually just recently did a show, did a fantastic job. So definitely check out that episode. And for listeners out there who haven't heard, his episode was especially good. And one of these days we'll get Ro on here. He's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, both of them are fantastic. Yeah.
So they were great to have as judges, and you know, kind of bring their side of brewing into the homebrew world.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really easy morning. Just one flight. Each judge is paired with another one, and they will do an entire category of 6 or 7 beers, and they'll award first, second, and third. And
nice.
Then each winner from each category will go on to what is the best of show that will get that awesome. What did you call it, Katie? Build-A-Beer?
Build-A-Beer.
It's run, if I'm right, it's run the same way that you run a national homebrew competition.
Yeah. Just on a much more manageable scale.
On a much smaller scale. But we want to make sure that they're getting the same professionalism that we give in other competitions, too. So, like John said, they get great feedback from certified judges, from professional brewers, and hopefully that lets them know, we're taking it seriously, but of course also having fun. Is the most important thing.
So even if they don't place, they're still getting criticism or constructive mm-hmm. criticism from all of the judges so that they know kind of what to do moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now for your typical homebrew competition, these judges are judging a lot more entries. Can you give our listeners kind of an idea of what that looks like quickly?
Yeah. So if you're having a competition, you know, say you have 100 entries in a competition, which, you know, is going to require a little bit more organizing, or you know, something as big as National Homebrew Competition, which is up to 750 entries mm-hmm. in a competition site. You're going to have a variety of categories and those entry counts in each category. So say American IPA, you could have 50 entries in that and you wouldn't want a pair of judges judging 50 entries in a day.
It would
cruel and unusual. So, you would put multiple panels of judges on that category. So you keep them within, you know, 8 entries or so of their flight. And, those panels of judges would then choose their best few entries that they would want to move on to the next round. So, say you and I are judging Sarah, and then we want to push on 2 entries that we, you know, really think exemplify American IPA. And then say, Katie is judging with someone else. She still push on 2 entries as well. And, then you'll kind of narrow down the field until you get to 1, 2, and 3.
Wow.
It sounds complicated. It's kind of complicated.
It's kind of complicated. And you have both been judges for different competitions.
I have never been a judge. I've been a steward. And okay. I was going to make the pitch. If you guys hear that a craft brewers conference or American homebrew con is mm-hmm. coming to your city, look into volunteering to be a steward to help with something like that. The competitions are, it's amazing to see how well it's run.
Okay.
But you also learn so much, because for me, I got to, you know, sit in the room and get water or matzo when they needed it, mm-hmm. And just, you know, provide the judges with what they needed, but then also get to hear them talking about the beer and judging the beer. You learn so much just from being a part of that.
Oh, that is a great tip for sure. And I didn't realize they used matzo.
It's matzo, right?
Matzo or bread or oyster crackers.
There's actually a bread basket that comes. Yeah. So, you know, whatever you want.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just thought that was, you know, apt with the holiday and everything, you know. all right. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. We're going to try some of these homebrews. Welcome back to Beer Me on Full Service Radio, recording live at the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. I'm your host, Sarah Jane, and I'm joined today by Katie Marisik, the Federal Affairs Manager of the Brewers Association and Beer Me's very first guest, and John Moorhead. He is the American Homebrewers Association National Homebrew Competition Coordinator. That's right. I am slowly demoting him bit by bit throughout the show. He's really the director. We have some of the beer from the homebrew competition that you guys just did on the Hill yesterday. This is with the Hill Staff Homebrew Competition. What are we trying here?
We're trying what is entered as a specialty IPA.
Okay.
I believe it's a black IPA.
I was going to say, because this is very, 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 very deep, deep brown.
It is not a normal looking IPA.
Yeah.
Can't say too much more about it, because I don't want to reveal too much information as far as you know, who might have entered it or how it did. But we thought we'd bring over some of the entries from the competition to have you try, and drinking some congressional homebrew right now.
Yeah, no, I love it. So when do you announce the winners?
On December 11th. So one of the things that we do on the Hill is with 7,000 breweries out there, I believe we are down to only 3 congressional districts that do not currently have their own brewery. We try and bring beer from all over the country so people can try it. Mm-hmm. And we have our annual holiday reception on December 11th. So we're going to have breweries from across the country there bringing beer. And then we're also going to have the awards ceremony.
Okay.
Another thing that we do is we bring the leftover homebrew for people to try as well. So there's a booth set up where they can come and they can try, you know, their coworkers' beer that they made. Give them a little bit of feedback. We're also doing a House versus Senate competition. Mm-hmm. Those beers that we made when we did the homebrew on the Hill, we are going to have them there to serve, and people can vote for which one they like best.
Nice. Nice. Have you tried them yet?
I have not. John, have you tried them?
Yes, I have.
Do you have a favorite? You don't have to share the favorite, but just know
I have a favorite.
You do have a favorite. Okay.
But you won't know my favorite until the 11th.
Did they do like wildly different styles?
Yes.
Okay.
I could probably reveal those, right?
Yeah, you can reveal the styles.
A little sneak preview.
Yeah.
We did an oatmeal stout.
Okay.
And a tangerine pale ale.
All right. Yeah. Wildly different styles.
Yes. They both turned out really well. They'll be served with a little voting booth area, but with a raffle. And yeah, we'll see who wins.
So, John, I'm going to assume that you have done your fair share of home brewing.
Yes.
Okay. Just, you know.
It's fair assumptions.
Cover my bases here. Yes. I don't know. You're the, you know, American Homebrewers Association National Homebrew Competition assistant. So I don't know at this point. So this beer here that we're drinking, so it's a black IPA. And as a home brewer, what are some things that you have to be careful about with a beer like this, with this particular style? You know, what are some things you got to kind of look out for to avoid it, you know,
from going astray,
right? This is great. This is solid. But what are some things that you really got to keep an eye out for with this particular style?
I would look at, so this kind of style, you know, you want to make it a black IPA. So you're going to need some dark malt in there.
Mm-hmm.
And with that dark malt, you can impose some astringency that you definitely don't want in a beer like this. So balancing that effect with your overall grain bill and choosing the right kind of hop profile to kind of balance that overall grain as well. So really looking at I've made a black IPA and it was astringent. So this is all from personal experience. And it was definitely came down to the roast malt that I was using, so either chocolate malt or a black patent or something like that.
Okay.
To make it dark, but not to overdo it with that, is, you know, tweaking with that batch after batch. So that would be my personal experience.
Yeah. I feel like homebrewing is like a golf game. Like you're just slowly tweaking like one tiny little thing to like try to get that, you know, to get that good swing.
It's a really good analogy because I mean? I do that in golf. Yeah.
I'm you know, for the past like an embarrassing amount of time, I've been trying to learn how to play golf, and I love it because of that kind of like personal struggle, you know, where like you're kind of constantly punishing yourself, knowing that you are a failure, you know, like,
but you still continue.
But you still
on
keep doing it.
Knowledge?
It's like being in the restaurant industry. Yeah. It's the same kind of mentality.
Just analogy after analogy.
Yeah, like I'm going to go in every day, and it's going to be terrible, but I'm going to keep doing it.
Do you also make your mind totally blank when you're homebrewing too, the way I do when I'm golfing?
Right. Yes.
But I feel like, yeah, you're making like little adjustments. All right, I'm going to hold my hands just a little bit differently. I'm going to hold my shoulder a little bit differently.
Right.
And so I feel like homebrewing is like just constantly tweaking these like little snippets.
And you want to be making notes of that, you know, just like you're making mental notes in golf about how you're swinging or following through or your hand position, you know, in brewing. You want to make those notes about what temperatures you were hitting at what location and you know, your grain bill and what you might change and not change, so you can really dial in those tweaks and not be guessing and try to narrow down the variables of those. So
nice.
Homebrewing and golf, I also drink when I'm doing both of those things.
There's the tie, right?
And there is sort of, I think there's that same thing too, like two beers and you're in that relaxed state, your swing's going really good. Anything more than that while you're home brewing and you don't connect the hose right and your black IPA turns into a sessionable beer.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that is an important thing. You always want to be relaxing and, you know, things are going to turn out well one way or the other. So not being overworked and overstressed and, you know, as Charlie, our godfather says, you know, relax, don't worry, I have a homebrew, so.
That's a good, like, life policy, too.
It's a great
life policy. Not just homebrewing, but life policy. So, Katie, have you found this to be, homebrew competition to be as effective as you want it to be?
I can always say that things can be better, for sure. But so far, I think it's been great because we do have new people participating every year and the people from the years before participating again. Like anything, I mean, it is an endeavor. We live in Washington, D.C. People have, studios or one-bedroom apartments.
Yeah.
So our thing is to make it as accessible as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Connecting them with their local homebrewing clubs, saying, like, hey, you know, this guy knows how to brew beer. If you haven't done it before, they're happy to help you. And I think that we're going to continue to see it grow successfully. People love that trophy. I love the trophy.
That's a great, yeah, no, the description's amazing.
But we do, it's not just this event where we have people try homebrew.
Mm-hmm.
We also do a reception in June around our hill climb, and we've started asking different D.C. homebrew clubs or Maryland or Virginia homebrew clubs to come and participate, to share some homebrew with us so people can get used to, like, sort of equating those two things together.
Okay.
So many people in the brewing industry started out, you know, as homebrewers.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that we want to acknowledge and we want to celebrate that history, especially this year since it's the 40th anniversary of the American Homebrewers Association.
Nice.
Yeah.
I just joined, actually.
All right.
That's excellent
like
news.
2 months ago. Because I have, you know, space now to actually brew in my house.
Yeah.
So it's kind of nice.
Yeah. And, you know, there are a variety of other things that you get to. You get the magazine, obviously.
Yes. Zymerdy.
And then member deals as well, so a variety of discounts at bars and homebrew shops and breweries and things of that nature. So I think we have over 2,000 deals on that on Brew Guru app.
Oh, yeah, the Brew Guru app that you get with the membership.
Yeah.
And the membership's not expensive. It's like $40.
Yeah, yeah,
okay.
$38 for
and
a digital. Yeah.
You also get the, so you get the magazine,
yep.
Which is an amazing magazine, and the articles in there are fantastic. So you get the magazine, you get all these different deals on Brew Guru. There are all these different events that always kind of pop up in my email now, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
It's just this really, really great resource. Plus, you know, you're, you know, part of an organization that's like out there doing good things.
Yeah. So. I think we just also passed 1,000 recipes on our website.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. With either award-winning recipes from National Homebrew Competition or, you know, clone recipes that we're getting from breweries that want to, you know, provide their recipe for homebrewers. So a lot of great resources and continue to also advocate for homebrewers' rights at, you know, the state and federal level. So
is that the clone article coming out soon? Did that come out already?
Like it is. It's coming out very soon, I think.
Yeah, it's
we
really
finally have all 51 states plus D.C.
That's why. Yeah, that's why I like AHA. They always remember D.C. when they're getting stuff from all 50 states.
I appreciate that. I would really like to be a state.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, it's clone recipes from breweries in every state across the country in D.C., and it's a great way to, you know, try some of those beers you never had before. I think I was looking at last year's, and it's like, oh, Pliny the Elder's on here.
Yeah.
I'll just quick brew up my own batch.
Nice. Well, thank you two so much for coming by and sharing this really cool thing that you're doing on the Hill. That's amazing.
Yeah.
And thank you for sharing the homebrew. Very, very delicious. Lots of information for you all. If you have any questions, if there's anything that you need, feel free to reach out to me at beermeradio@gmail.com. Follow the podcast wherever you normally get podcasts. Also, I know you only listen to my show, but Full Service Radio is filled with so many amazing shows. For example, there is The Tidbit. So this is hosted by Kim Bryden. She's the CEO of Curate. And basically every week she sits down with guest experts and shares trending news and topics on food, business, and culture. And they discuss tidbits of knowledge around starting and running a small business with a food and beverage lens. So I appreciate her puns and whatnot. So definitely check out some other shows on Full Service Radio. We've got a quite a rainbow. Also, at the end of this episode here, there's going to be a little blurb, and this is some coverage from Snallygaster. So this is an event that I went to, and we did an episode about it in October with Greg Engert, the managing partner and beer director at Neighborhood Restaurant Group. Now, this coverage is a little windy, admittedly. It was a really stunning day with sunshine and just a light breeze, but that light breeze comes up a little crazy on the microphone, so bear with us here. But I kick off the coverage with an interview with Eric Bergman. He is the Director of Operations and Managing Partner for Neighborhood Restaurant Group, and definitely is kind of the man behind the monster that is Snallygaster, really working out all those crazy details. And I'm pretty sure he didn't sleep at all the entire week. So he kicks off that, and then there are some other interviews with some of the brewers and participants. So enjoy some Snallygaster coverage.
Full Service Radio.
So you shut down four blocks of Pennsylvania Avenue for a beer festival in Washington, D.C. How does that feel?
It feels pretty amazing. I gotta say, like, it feels like we are at the grown-up table finally. Not to say anything bad about the yards, but it's a little bit of an evolution. Just vibing on a lot of endorphins right now. I mean, this is really exciting. I couldn't be happier with the size of the crowd, the size of the space, and how comfortable it is right now. It's really incredible. Only thing I wish is some more money to buy chairs and seating for people, because I know I need one.
So I've talked to a lot of brewers, a lot of guests here. You know, they just know that this event is run well. And they, you know, again and again, they've said, you know, there's just things that we don't have to worry about because we know that it's already been taken care of. What are some, like, major things that you take care of for the brewers that, you know, maybe for some other festivals they have to worry about more?
Yeah, I want to give credit to the beer team on that. I mean, that's Greg Engert, obviously, the managing partner of the group as well, and beer director for all of our locations. And Tim Liu, his faithful assistant. I mean, honestly, the detail that goes into this festival is mind-boggling. They think of everything, and honestly, they keep getting better every year. I don't know how they keep getting better, but they keep thinking of new ways to improve. It's about having equipment ready. It's about having lists ready. Tim's addicted to spreadsheets, and he does it all that way. I mean, honestly, I've never seen someone so dedicated to perfection and come so close to pulling it off. It's always a pinch at the end, about an hour before you open. Everyone's running around. Tension gets a little high. But man, I tell you, this is the smoothest it's ever been. I'm just really impressed by them. It's all credit due to them, honestly. They've done all the legwork on that.
Have you treated yourself to a beer yet?
Absolutely not. If I did that, it'd be the end of the day. I gotta do some transporting of equipment, but trust me, there's plenty in my future later.
Awesome. What are you excited to kind of unwind with?
The closest thing to me, frankly. But honestly, I'm gonna end up back at Blue Jacket. I know I'm you know, touting my own brand, but I couldn't be happier with the beers coming out of there right now. So one of the new IPAs, like Distant Morning, is going to go down quite easily when I get over there.
That sounds awesome. Well, thank you so much, Eric. I appreciate you taking the time.
Thanks, Sarah Jane.
These types of festivals are like where it's at, in my opinion, because you have a discerning, you know, customer. People don't show up here to get like a pint glass of beer and get drunk. I mean, people are coming here to like expand their palates, to learn more about beer, to try the things they haven't tried before. So it's cool to deal with that level of customer, and it's really cool to interact with them on a one-on-one basis. I mean, every time they come up, you're getting really like second level like questions, like what type of yeast are you using, what type of hops you're using, you know, what type of techniques, you know, when you use the brute style, using enzymes, using champagne yeast, something really like cool, like next level type stuff. And it's a great opportunity to really just touch the customer, let them know what you're about, let them know what type of beers you're trying to do. And I love it.
This is your time with Dan Bronson from Single Cup Brewery out of the finest Astoria, Queens.
Woo!
Welcome to Snallygaster. How's it going for you so far?
It's going great, man. Snallygaster is one of those events that we legitimately look forward to all year long. Not just saying that to be nice. We actually love this festival. It's incredibly well run. The clientele who come here are both really like interested in getting to try new things, but also really interested in getting to talk to us, you know, talk about our story. Because, you know, really at the end of the day, that's what craft beer is really all about. Great liquid and great story. You know, you can go and get these really, really sought after beers, which are great. People make a hobby about it, and it's a whole culture. But you can buy amazing beer just on the shelf. I always kind of like to say, like, you know, the difference between that best beer on the shelf and the best beer that you go out to go get at a brewery, the difference in quality there is, I think, probably within the margin of error of the quality you get by, you know, having a beer by yourself versus having a beer with, like, great friends. You know, it's we're getting to that point now where kind of, like, experience is really defining the drinking experience.
Yeah, so, yeah, no, it's good, it's good.
That's,
you know, basically, you know, the beers that you stand in line for are great, but you could have a beer that is, you know, just as good in quality or maybe just a smidgen less in quality, but if you're having it in a really exciting or memorable experience, you're kind of still getting on that level. The margin of, you know, difference in, you know, between these beers is experience.
Yeah, for sure. For, you know, kind of guests who want great beer but maybe aren't drawn to that hobby of going out and hunting things, it's an exceptional time because you can legitimately find equal quality on the shelf in a high-end store, as long as it's cold and it's fresh, obviously.
So here's chatting with Dan Larges from Jester King Brewery out of Austin, Texas. He is a taproom manager as well as an engineer, kind of a jack-of-all-trades, wears many, many hats for the brewery. Thank you so much for taking a moment to chat.
Thanks for having me.
So for the listeners of the show that have, you know, been dedicated and listened to every episode, you know that I have a deep, deep, deep love for all things Jester King. I've gone every single time I have been to Austin, Texas, and Le Petit Prince is by far and away one of my favorite beers of all time.
Those are the right words to say. That's definitely the staff favorite.
For listeners who don't know, Le Petit Prince is their farmhouse ale. It's 2.8?
2.9.
Oh, getting a little zesty here. Yeah. So what are some beers that you're really excited about?
Ooh, I had a blackberry and boysenberry sour from Creature Comforts. The name's escaping me off the top of my head.
And this is Creature Comforts in Athens, Georgia.
That is correct. It was amazing. It really blew me away. And I also just had a Blue Jacket lager with my lunch, and that was, like, the perfect quencher. Yeah. It fits the hole that Petit Prince has created in my soul. Yeah.